Support for the Double Dome podcast comes from the Sorrell College of Business at Troy University, where students become geeks, an acronym for globally aware, ethical decision makers, engaged with the business community, knowledgeable to compete, and successful in business and life. More information at troy.edu/business.
The opinions expressed on this program represent the viewpoints of individual authors or contributors and do not necessarily reflect those of Troy University. This is eConversations, a joint production of Troy Trojan Vision and the Manuel H. Johnson Center for Political Economy. Now, here's your host, Dr. Dan Sutter.
Hello and welcome to eConversations. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Sutter of the Johnson Center for Political Economy at Troy University. Polls show that around a half of Americans under the age of 30 have a positive or favorable view of socialism, despite its failures in country after country. While the experiences of the Soviet Union and China under Mao have been well documented, many other countries experienced socialism in the 20th century, including the nations of Eastern Europe under the domination of the Soviet Union. Canada's Fraser Institute has undertaken a project to document the realities of socialism when it's been tried in other countries. The first study in this project looked at Poland's experience between 1945 and 1990. Did Poland experience any better outcomes under socialism? And has life improved since the collapse of the Eastern Bloc? Joining me on eConversations today is one of the authors of this book, Dr. Konstantin Zhukov, a visiting professor of economics at Trinity University and a Johnson Center alum. Konstantin studied as an undergraduate at North Dakota University before earning a master's degree in economics from Troy and then a PhD in economics from George Mason in 2023. His research focuses on Eastern Europe, the history of communism, and illegal markets. Welcome back to eConversations, Dr. Zhukov.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me back. And it's a great pleasure to be back to Trinity, to Troy, although online. And I'm very thankful to Troy, to the Johnson program for my education at my master's. Just wanted to say that before we move on.
It was great to have you here as a student, and it's great to see you having success as an economist starting your career. So tell us a little bit first about this project that you undertook, because you had a couple of co-authors, and so tell us a little bit about the project before we get into what happened in Poland.
Yes, exactly. So I had a chance to work with my advisor, Dr. Peter Grotke, and another former GMU scholar, Dr. Matthew Mitchell, who is right now at Fraser Institute. So we collaborated, we worked together on this project to understand what happened to Poland and Estonia before and after socialism, and whether the standards of living have improved ever since the Berlin Wall have fell and the countries have moved to the market economies. And the purpose of these books is to illustrate that institutions, that markets, they matter, and they can dramatically improve economic growth and prosperity to the people.
Well, let's talk a little bit in broad terms so that people are aware of exactly when it is we're talking about this here. When did Poland become a socialist or communist country, and when did the transition occur?
Right. So this is a great question. So Soviet Union and Nazi Germany, they divided Poland in September 1939. But the full movement of Poland towards socialism, towards communism, happened in 1944, once the Soviet Union was able to regain Poland. And within the 3 years, the Communist Party, the Polish Communist Party, was able to establish its power in the country. It was able to essentially gain. They won the elections through fraud, and then they canceled all other parties. They prosecuted the political opposition, and then they moved on to implementing their institutions, such as. They moved on to abolish private property, to abolish any kind of market institutions. The firms could not private firms could not operate anymore. So we can really start talking about the implementation of communism in Poland from around 46, 47. And then the country was able to become independent again without the influence from the Soviet Union in 1989. So that's approximate timeline.
I certainly remember in 1980 when the Solidarity Union began and Lech Walesa yes. was leading that, and then amazingly in 1991 he got elected president of Poland. So it was a great mm-hmm. transformation that changed many Poles' lives. So. And when you're talking about planning that occurred during this time, it was a serious socialism. I mean, it really was basically a true government control of the ownership of the means of production, right?
Exactly, yeah. So it was just... it was very much implementation of the classic kind of socialist policies to the extent that all of the private property was abolished. So the citizens of Poland could only, they had rights to the movable property. So let's say a car, or if you have one, if you can wait in line long enough, or you can also get a property to, you know, just like your basic private possessions, you know. But then when it came to the the property rights over movable property, such as land or buildings, for instance, then that was almost impossible to attain. But then there was also abolition of the market prices. So market prices and private property are the pillar of the market economy, and those were not allowed to operate in Poland. Instead, the prices were set by a special organization and commission that was setting the prices essentially for the whole of the economy. And any of the market institutions that we usually think of, banks, private stock, the stock market, you name it, those were also not in existence. There was no private banks, there was no stock market, there was no insurance firms. You could not go to a private doctor to get healthcare. It was all provided by the state.
Now, you mentioned in the book that a lot of people sometimes say that socialism is good in theory but doesn't work well in practice. But actually, economic theory offers some very good reasons why socialism is likely to fail. So tell us briefly about the three problems that economists have identified with the idea of centrally planning an economy.
Exactly. So there are three major problems with the socialist economy. There is a control problem, there is a knowledge problem, and the incentive problem. The control problem refers to the idea that in the market economies, it is individuals that are planning and acting upon their own plans. While in the socialist economy, it's a central central planning agency, central planners who are making the plan of society, essentially what it means is that for the plans to work, the government needs to enforce these plans on individuals, even on those who disagree with them. So this leads to the control problem of how to control the population, how to make sure that they comply with the plans, and that often involves some sort of repression from the central planners. That's why social communist societies were some of the have committed some of the atrocity for the last of the 20th century, right? Then there is also a knowledge problem. The knowledge problem refers to the idea that when it comes to economic decision making, we need to have knowledge to make the most economically sound decisions. We need information to make sure that we are using the least costly methods to attain our goals. And so in a market economy, we have private property and emerging market prices that allow for the coordination and for the emergence of prices, adjusting of prices, and for the economic calculation. That, however, is impossible in the socialist economies. In the socialist economies, it's impossible to tell the scarcity of any of the goods. It's impossible to make the proper economic decision and utilize the least costly methods in your production. Finally, the incentive problem refers to the idea that it is hard to incentivize the workers to perform a good job without the proper incentive. Think about the market economy where you as a manager, you have the incentive for your firm to do well, for the firm to operate well, because you have so maybe bonuses, you have so maybe incentive structure. And the same applies to the market firms, right? Where the workers also have some sort of bonuses. And more companies we can see worldwide, in the United States, for instance, where they're offering different kinds of kind of privileges to their workers. So in the Soviet economy, in the communist economy, that's incentive problem is very much real because as a manager, you do not own a part of the firm. You're just controlling its processes. So your incentive to make sure that the firm operates properly is weaker. And the same applies to workers, especially because the Soviet system, the communist system, they're supposed to operate on the principle of egalitarianism, of having equal salaries. And the interesting thing is that although some of the countries, including Poland, they started from this premise of having equal wages, but they quickly realized that this is not attainable and that they have to switch to the different wage system where they actually had egalitarianism. They didn't have egalitarianism where managers started and highly qualified workers, they had better privileges and positions in society.
Well, Poland was where World War II started, Germany invading Poland in September. And Poland was a scene of a lot of fighting during the war. And at the time you get to 1944, the country had been devastated. And then, as you explain in the book, the Soviet Union actually moved a lot of physical capital equipment to Russia and out of the country. So Poland started in a very desperate situation about 1945 when they also started central planning. But as you explained, that actually helped make the central planners' problem a little easier at the start. And so Poland experienced relatively fast growth for a while. Explain to us why this was true.
So the reason why Poland experienced such a dramatic growth is that it's a fact that Poland was destroyed. Both Nazi Germany and Soviet Union, they have, throughout their infighting, destroyed the infrastructure, they have destroyed capital, they have destroyed labor, they have destroyed the agricultural land and livestock. So from that perspective, of course, we know from the economics, right, the catching up, once you start with lower level of capital, for instance, your rate of growth is going to be much higher. Once you start accumulating capital. But once you reach a certain threshold, you're going to hit kind of like the your growth rate are going to slow down. And so the lower level of capital and infrastructure have allowed for better growth initially for the socialist Poland. But then once Poland was more or less restored, then the kind of the usual dynamics of the socialist economy kicked in to the extent that there was just the shortages of many goods. The production was very inefficient, was very ineffective. And because of the lack of access to the investments, because of lack of property rights, the economy just stagnated and couldn't really develop. I think we talk about in our book how from 1970 to about until the collapse of the communist Poland, the growth rate on average from 1970 to 1990 was about 1.8%, something like that. So by any means, it was not a high growth rate for the country.
We can show a couple of the numbers that you guys show in there. And one thing was, and I guess this was due to some of the details of the planning process, but Poland produced a lot of steel, and they used a lot of steel in producing the goods and services, a lot more than other countries. And so that actually represents it. And one of you might think, oh, that's a productive economy, producing all this steel. but they were actually producing way more steel than other countries used to produce output, right? And so that's a sign of inefficiency.
Exactly, yes. So and one of the reasons why Poland was trying to produce so much steel is because of the general dynamics of the socialist economy, where they try to industrialize, kind of like the move the country towards the... So according to socialist theoreticians, the only way to move country towards the communists throughout history is by industrializing. And that's what Poland focused in, on producing or developing its industrial capacity and overemphasizing industrial production such as steel or coal, for instance. But as a result of that, the negative side of it was that the consumer sector was underdeveloped. Mm-hmm. People did not have enough of the goods for their households. And that led actually to many of the social unrest in the country.
And their industrialization was not very environmentally friendly, so we didn't have very green socialism in Poland. But then, as you've already mentioned, but you have a couple of statistics here on this, goods and services didn't end up being available. This wasn't exactly a worker's paradise. And like, here's the waiting time to get housing in Poland. It was just off the charts in terms of that delay there of like years, 15 plus years you had to wait to get housing. And the prices of goods, well, I mean, and as you mentioned, once you have like these artificially set prices, they're not real market prices. But if you estimated the amount of time it took Poles, we would work to get different items, it was much, much higher than in Western countries, right?
Absolutely, and this is exactly what we're talking about. The economy was totally inefficient. As you can see in this graph, it took way more time for in Poland to produce coffee, color TV, or any other item compared to West Germany. So that just illustrates how inefficient the economy was, because there was no incentive to structure the efficient production, and there was no way to rely on the market knowledge to for the production. So and as you mentioned too, it wasn't only the wait for the houses, for the apartments in 30 years for which the Poles had to wait. It really applied to many of the basic goods, right? To the cars, for instance, too. So the Polish people were really much more disadvantaged compared to many other states.
Well, then the Soviet Union started to pull back, and Poland underwent this transition and implement more market-oriented policies. But I guess first we have to document that they actually made a transition. And the people at the Fraser Institute also put out the Economic Freedom of the World Index. And so you use that to measure whether or not Poland actually engaged in a transition. So tell us very briefly what's involved with the Economic Freedom of the World.
Yeah, so when it comes to the Economic Freedom of the World, it involves several rankings, such as the size of the government, protection of the property rights and the legal system. It also involves the sound money. So what is the monetary policy of this state, whether it's sustainable. Could you also move the slide back? So I think it would be easier for me to talk about this. I was just, I cannot hear you.
Oh, I haven't. So we have the Economic Freedom of the World, and then you can actually measure it, because we have they've been able to go back to measure economic freedom in Poland back before the transition, and then we can see what happened after that. And the numbers show here, and I guess I should mention for everybody, index goes from 0 to 10, where 0 is no economic freedom, and 10 is a lot of economic freedom. And Poland experienced a very significant increase in economic freedom in those years there after the collapse of the socialism.
Exactly. And so one of the things I wanted to mention about Poland The case of Poland is really remarkable because of where Poland started from. So Poland started off comparatively to other countries under the sphere of the social the Soviet influence. Poland actually started off from the higher lower economic freedom ranking.
Mm-hmm.
But it also started off from lower GDP per capita. If we look at there was a graph in our book on the GDP per capita in 1985 of the socialist states compared to that of the United States. And so Poland had the lowest GDP per capita compared to other countries such as Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm.
But Poland also had the highest inflation moving into the transition. I think in 89 or 90, it was 250%. So it was on the brink of the hyperinflation.
Right.
And Poland also started with the largest debt of all the countries from what were in the transition process. So I think it is even more remarkable that they started off from the worst position compared to everyone else, and how remarkable their success has been. Of course, the transition has not been perfect, but they did really well.
Well, another thing that plagued the Eastern European countries, I mean, the Soviet Union had this whole planned system of international trade between these countries, but it was all planned. That it was sort of all based on orders, not any economic principles of one country's producing something of value to other countries based on their comparative advantage or any of the ways in which you would normally expect to see international trade in a free market develop. So they had a lot of baggage. They had a lot of bad things they had to try to overcome here. But, and as you said, it's like some of these other countries started at a higher level of economic freedom, but Poland made, I think, the largest increase in economic freedom. So they certainly did some good things in terms of the transition. And one way we could certainly measure it is looking at state-owned enterprises and employment in the state-owned enterprises, because 1989 or so, when you're starting this process, as you mentioned, the government owned all of the means of production. That meant basically everybody was working for the state. And this is one measure that you can show that Poland actually did quite very well in terms of privatizing these ventures, right?
Yeah, so moving into the transition, I think about 1989 or 1990, 80% of the labor was working in the state companies, in the state firms. The rest were working primarily in the agricultural sector because the communists did not really try to collectivize. They tried to collectivize the Poles, but it didn't work because of how strong the Polish agricultural resistance was. So the only area where private enterprises could work in Poland during the socialist period was in agriculture. But the state essentially cut them off from any financial aid from the financial markets. So they were very low scale. But the main point is that moving into transition, most of the workers were in the state-owned enterprises. And Poland has done a tremendous job in terms of the privatizing the firms. Of course, it was not a perfect process. It took them longer compared to other countries to privatize the firms. I think the process was still going on in 2005, 2006 or so. But they still did really well. And they only retained state-owned firms in the strategic industries. So I think it's energy firms, telecommunication firms, utility firms. Of course, there is still room for improvement, but they have done a really good job.
And as you described, they also did a very good job liberalizing their financial markets. A stock market got started in allowing mm-hmm. foreign investment and opening up to international trade as well.
Exactly, yes. Unfortunately, during the Soviet era, all of the the communist countries, they were kind of vassals of the Soviet mm-hmm. Russia. So their trade, their production was very much dependent on sustaining Soviet Russia. And so when So when Berlin Wall fell, one of the major problems for Poland at the time was that it had to rebuild its international trade from scratch. It had to find new logistical routes. It had to find new inputs, new customers. So that's one of the reasons why there was such high unemployment, just because it's not an easy task to really start everything from the scratch to start your international trade and investments.
And it's really important when you see that trade rebound. It was because now they were operating in a global market. Their companies had to actually be producing something that others wanted to buy, as opposed to being ordered to buy under the old Soviet planned system of international trade. So I mean, that itself is a great sign that their businesses they were converting to having businesses that were doing that were making good products.
Exactly, this is exactly the case. And of course, it took them some time to adjust to this. Even to imagine that if you lived your whole life under socialism, where you didn't have even the idea of how the trade should work, or maybe you had an idea only from operation of the illegal markets, but it's still not the same. So I think it's still quite remarkable how they have been able to adjust to this new market mentality and the new market processes. And now we see how tremendous growth has been in Poland ever since the markets have been able to unleash their productivity.
Well, yeah, and so we like to measure economic standards of living based on real GDP, and we can talk all about the great things of the reform and the transition, but I mean, I guess ultimately people want to see, let's see the money, let's see the performance on growth. Yeah. And it's been pretty remarkable for Poland. They've certainly made a tremendous transition, like you said, from being one of the poorer communist countries to being quite certainly middle income or on par with other European countries now.
Absolutely. So according to our estimates, so as we've said, Poland was growing at the rate, on an average rate of 1.8% from 1970 to 1990. So when the economy has matured and recovered from the World War II. And so if the country were to sustain this path, we have made the estimate that right now Poland would have the GDP per capita of 14,000 and something by now, right? But now, ever since, just the graph that you showed, it showed this remarkable jump in economic growth and real GDP per capita, how GDP just shot up in the sky. Yeah. Now it's 32,000 per capita. It's remarkable. And of course, I should mention that transition hasn't been perfect. There was high unemployment rate. A lot of the people in the former industrial agriculture sectors, especially on the east of the country, they were hurt by the transition, unfortunately. But by and large, the standards of living have improved.
And he also showed that it wasn't just Poland. The countries that reformed more have had better growth. So we're near the end of our time. Anything you wanted to sort of add to wrap up here?
I think the main idea that we would like to illustrate with our book is that institutions really matter. They matter for economic growth. And the reason why we started this project is because the younger generation of Americans, of Canadians, they have this, they haven't lived through the Cold War, they haven't lived through the collapse of the socialist state, so they have not witnessed really what socialism leads to. And we try to illustrate that though these ideas could be very, the ideas of socialism could be very compelling, we wanted to illustrate what happens when they're put into practice.
Well, thanks so much. It was great to catch up with you, and thanks for coming on joining us. And thank you for joining us. Join us again next time for another eConversations.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your...
This has been eConversations, a joint production of Troy Trojan Vision and the Manuel H. Johnson Center for Political Economy at Troy University.
Support for the Double Dome podcast comes from the Sorrell College of Business at Troy University, where students become GEEKS, an acronym for Globally Aware, Ethical Decision Makers, Engaged with the Business Community, Knowledgeable to Compete, and Successful in Business and Life. More information at troy.edu/business.